Welcome to the Werewolf Den, where we do a deep dive into the core concepts and principles behind White Wolf's Werewolf the Apocalypse.
I'm Amelin.
And I am Ryan.
Welcome back. So, last time we talked about how we were going to discuss why you should play Werewolf the Apocalypse. And it seems a little weird that we're discussing this now.
Consider a 1 year anniversary thereabouts.
Yeah, well, consider it a 1 year anniversary, like, hullabaloo or something like that.
But I think it's important because we have gotten a lot of comments from people who haven't played Werewolf yet, who are intrigued by the system, and I feel that this is a good way to sort of further ignite that fire to want to play or run Werewolf the Apocalypse. And we'll talk about those sorts of things. But obviously the two of us are very passionate about this gaming system and much of the audience is as well. So if you love it, great. If this helps you sort of like get rekindled to want to play or just excited to play again, something like that.
Gives you arguments for why you can tell people, hey, you should play this game. Can we not play Vampire or Mage for the eighth time
and yeah.
Try a different one?
Mm-hmm. So Amelin and I have very different perspectives of what motivates us to play Werewolf the Apocalypse. And as we were discussing it, it kind of became clear to me that many of my opinions are very micro level. It's very individualized, very much so focused on myself as a player and why I want to be in this. Whereas Amelin has a more macro perspective, talking about themes and things of that sort. Far more academic, whereas I'm sort of the plebe.
Oh, come on now. Now you're just making me sound like a pretentious asshole. But it's true. No, the biggest reasons why I do love this game have to do with the narrative themes and storytelling opportunities that Werewolf presents that are unique to this setting. So both of us discussed it, and we figure it's best to start with that micro level.
And we'll widen out as we go. So I believe I'd mentioned this in a previous episode, but to sort of reiterate the point, one of the things that I love about Werewolf the Apocalypse is it's a game where you're a monster, but you're ostensibly one of the good ones. You are a protagonist trying to better the world. And unlike your, you know, typical D&D where you are an adventurer who's going around killing goblins and saving maidens and towers, it's not really making you a better person. You're just sort of mirroring tropes that exist within the fantasy genre. Werewolf the Apocalypse actually makes you a better person. I remember telling the story of the millipede spirit that I learned Odious Aroma, the Bonar gift, from. And prior to me learning this gift, I knew millipedes existed. They were the cuter, but cousins of centipedes in sort of my mind. And that was it. But as I was researching for this gift, for the chiminage I was going to perform, I learned that millipedes are actually really cool. And the person developed an appreciation for millipedes. So now when I see millipedes around, I'm like, oh, hey, little guy, how's it going? And I have become a better person. And yes, in the grand scheme of things, Ryan's better treatment and better mental impression of millipedes isn't going to make a damn bit of difference in the world. But it's still something. It's still a small level of growth and personal betterment. And Werewolf doesn't just sort of ask you to fulfill these tropish obligations of being a good person. It actually incentivizes you to do that. Because if you want to learn a gift, you have to get chiminage. And so you learn about these different things, about the natural world, about human culture, and the way the two intermesh and intermingle, and you come out of it a genuinely better person.
And this whole idea plays into the themes of the game. It really does.
Which we'll get to. Yeah. All of this sort of like fits together very, very well. But I love that about Werewolf. No other game I've played has really helped me to grow in that sense. Yes, it's a social game, and so if you're socially nervous, it can help you expand in that direction. But in terms of actually making you a genuinely better person with measurable growth, Werewolf is second to none, in my opinion. If someone else knows of a system that can rival Werewolf, I'd love to hear it, because I will fight on this hill and expect that I would die on it, because I don't think there's any that can rival it. But I love that about Werewolf. And it incentivizes you to do that as well.
Right? It incentivizes you through multiple levels, too.
Yes.
Ryan mentioned chiminage before, but there's also various different things, like with the tribes. We mentioned before on this podcast how the tribes are basically just modern actual politics that people have, actual political beliefs and philosophies that people follow.
Mm-hmm.
And people follow philosophies because they feel like following these philosophies are going to make them better people. Now, some of these philosophies to many other people are quite monstrous, and that's what we'll get into another one of those themes later.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the whole point. The whole point is that you care. The system incentivizes you to care about shit.
Yeah, and it works so well. Because by learning about millipedes and coming to appreciate millipedes, I came up with a cool chiminage and I got an awesome supernatural power that I can now use in game. It's fantastic incentivization. So I truly love it for that reason. I think if there's any one thing to say about Werewolf to make other people play it, it's play it because it'll make you a better person. It's hard to argue against that, I think. But to sort of build on to that, you know, I've said this as well, that, you know, the World of Darkness systems are set within the real world. And so you as a player can come into this. I think we discussed it in our player-driven campaign episode. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, we did.
You as a player understand so much about the setting to begin with. You don't have to go to the storyteller and, you know, if you're playing in a Greyhawk setting in D&D, say, what are the best top 10 songs right now in the taverns? You know, who's the best minstrel group in Greyhawk? You don't have to ask that. You know that. You can find that out extremely easily in this game. But yes, it is a setting where you are already aware of so many aspects of this game. And because it is a game that asks you to care, to do something in the world, to make it better, it's extremely easy to come up with ways to build a character that feels unique and fits into the world without the storyteller lifting a finger. I can't tell you how many times I've been asked to make a vampire game for another, or a vampire character for another vampire game, and it's, I've sort of played out vampires and I can't really think of interesting ways to explore the concept that I haven't done 10 years ago. It's extremely hard for me to come up with a vampire that feels compelling and new and has a call to action. But Werewolf?
That call to action is built into the character.
Yeah. It's extremely easy for me to think up dozens of interesting concepts. And Aemlyn and I both have just lists of ideas of werewolves that we'd love to get the opportunity to play, but are almost certainly never going to come up. It's extremely easy to do this because the real world is there.
One of the big things when people talk on regular D&D and gaming podcasts is the notion of developing a character that has a call to action. Mm. Werewolf has that call to action built in. Now, here's where the criticism very frequently comes in with Werewolf, where the call to action is just, oh, this is just Captain Planet, but in the World of Darkness, fuck you, please actually read something.
Yeah, and I look at some game cultures, like Dungeons & Dragons, been playing it since the TSR days, and it's evolved in a very, very fantastic way. But one of the things that always sort of, like, gets me in my old man crutches yelling on my lawn is that you see memes of people who are like, I want to make a loaf of sentient bread who's a wizard and casts Mage Hand so he can move around as just a loaf of bread. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I think that's something that Werewolf will never really have a problem with. Because Dungeons & Dragons doesn't give you any great calls to action. You're relying on the storyteller to tell you what you're doing, and you're fulfilling these old tropes. Killing the goblin, saving the maiden, da-da-da-da-da. And so people, like I said with my vampire example, they're looking at the system and they're going, what can I do that is different? I have played one of every class, one of every race. What do I do next? That weird picture of Daniel Radcliffe in a bathrobe and, like, fuzzy slippers and guns. Like, I'll do that because it's weird and crazy. And Werewolf everything just kind of goes off the rails.
Yeah, Werewolf is a system that actively resists the notion of the troll character in a lot of senses. The closest thing that people can get is by making fun of people who care about a thing. And guess what? That's the easiest way to identify the shitty people that you can kick out of your game now.
Yeah. Like, there's just so many options and ways to fit within this world that I don't think you could ever exhaust that minefield. Werewolf the Apocalypse has more character versatility than Changeling the Lost, and I'll fight anyone on it. I feel that there's just more to engage with and more tools to do that.
Changeling the Lost has a lot of versatility. It's my second favorite game because you can literally be anything, but being is not the same thing as doing. And that's the big key difference. With Werewolf the Apocalypse, you can do anything.
Yeah. Which brings me to my third point. Game developers talk about two different elements of character growth. You have lateral growth and you have horizontal growth. Lateral growth is, I bought a new dot of strength, so I can roll more dice. Whereas horizontal growth is, I got this new gift that lets me do something I couldn't do before. And Werewolf is chock full of horizontal growth. There are so many tools at your disposal to actually interact with the world in new ways, in innovative fashions. There's so many options for you. It boggles my mind. And nothing can compete with this. You know, in Vampire, you've got your three clan disciplines, and they go in a tier from 0 to 5. And you need to get 1 before you can get 2. Whereas in Werewolf the Apocalypse, you have multiple trees within your breed, your auspice, and your tribe. And if you don't want to buy any rank 2 gifts, that's fine. Once you get to rank 3, you can buy a rank 3 gift. Just do the chiminage. There's all sorts of different ways for you to actually empower your character to further engage with the world. Not just rolling more dice to be more likely to succeed, but doing something you couldn't have done before and opening new avenues to achieve success. So many werewolf gifts are entirely horizontal growth.
There is no werewolf game where I will say that city running is not a useful gift.
Oh my gosh. Just
seriously. Parkour!
Super parkour, doing Hollywood level stunts. It's Tony Jaa. I'm chasing down the street, I guess, because holy crap, doesn't break the veil or masquerade or any of that. And what can you now think to do when you have this great escape tool or infiltration tool? There's so much you can do with this game, which feeds back to my second point, that you've got all of these tools at your disposal to think up an amazing, cool concept that has probably never been thought up before. And it's just so liberating to have all of that at your disposal, even if you're just a chunko rank 1 Garu with no freebie points to spend. You can still engage with this setting in such a unique and expansive way, and no other system, I think, can really compare with the amount of calls to action and the amount of tools in your toolbox to pursue those calls without the storyteller even putting a pencil on a piece of paper.
And even within those gifts we talked about in previous episodes, you can flavor those gifts to match the aesthetic that you're going for with your character, how you want to express your character. Do you want to flavor your dream speak like you learned it from the spirit of horror fandom? Or do you want to flavor it like you learned it from a weird fae spirit?
Mm-hmm.
There's so many possibilities to, within those gifts, further express yourself within them. And this level of expression plays in to those themes that Ryan mentioned earlier that I adore with this game. There are two key themes within this game: the theme of change and the spirit of
radicalization.
Thank you. Radicalization. So often when I come across people with this game, particularly if they're only familiar with it, kind of as a passing familiarity as a vampire fan, I mentioned before, they have this idea of it's Captain Planet with World of Darkness. And it's like, no, environmentalism is not the point. Environmentalism is a trope within the game. A trope is not a theme. This is a very, very common mistake that is made. Tropes and themes are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Environmentalism plays a key role because, as we mentioned before, you're supposed to care about shit in this game.
Yeah.
That is a key aspect of this game. Your character cares about shit. And you know what big thing affects everything, no matter what the fuck you care about? The goddamn environment collapsing. It's a thing where it's like, you don't have to focus on it, though. You do not have to focus on the environmental aspect. You certainly can. They are very easily woven into, but they are not the point. The point is that you care about something enough that something needs to change.
And these things that you care about are oftentimes critical. We're talking the, you know, 23rd hour and 59th minute on the doomsday clock kind of thing. Where, yeah, that millipede, that's a cool thing to care about, but the environment collapsing is dire. People are dying because of gender inequality and economic inequality. Like
colonialism.
Lives are being destroyed. Yeah. By these facets of the worm. And gradual change is great if you can do it, but unfortunately, it's just not enough. In the time it takes you to enact that gradual change, thousands or perhaps millions of people will die waiting for that change to happen. And at the same time, you have a supernatural resource of rage, which is calling on you to do something. Do something, do something, do something, do something. And oftentimes it's violent because you are angry that the world is not the way it should be. And in pursuing these goals, these calls to action that, like I said, you have so many options to choose from and ways to approach it. In pursuing this change, you are striving for something radical. You are striving to make things better as fast as possible because tomorrow might be too late. And in doing that, you are radically destabilizing the status quo. And there are people who are going to be hurt by that, which brings up those themes of being a monster.
Mm-hmm.
All of this feeds in together.
Yeah, Shakes agrees. You are a monster if you upset her status quo. Absolutely. Yeah. Have you met a cat?
Have you fed her 10 minutes late? Ugh.
These themes of change for the sake of a better world, but that change upsetting a status quo, and then thus you are seen as a monster, that is what brings the horror element to this game. There's a great system. There's a great interwoven reality of corruption that is causing misery into the world. But in order to get that corruption out, it's going to be inevitable that you're going to do some damage, and that's where your character's monstrous flaws come in. What is acceptable damage to do?
Mm-hmm.
That is where the horror comes into this game. If you are a Black Fury, it is not acceptable for you to hurt these innocent, disempowered, queer people and women who just are trying to live their lives. That is not acceptable. The absolute manifestation of the worm hurts those people. And it's the same thing with the other tribes. All the other tribes have this thing where it is not acceptable. This aspect of the world is not acceptable. But in order to do something about it, they may destabilize something. And the Silver Fang family, who thrives off of the labor provided by the Bonar kinfolk, who survives and does their great works because the Bonar kinfolk toil away, is the villain to the Bonar, who sees the pain that those Bonar kinfolk are going through and says, that is not acceptable. What you are doing to do your supposed great works is not acceptable. So you have this interconflict between both the tribes themselves and from the systemic world at large. Everything is complicated, and that's what makes the game beautiful, because it's not as simple as Captain Planet, but in World of Darkness. It's a complex issue, and you can either sit down and do nothing and fall to Hirano, or
frenzy.
Exactly.
Give in to the rage, and in a frustrated admission that nothing can be done, just lose yourself in anger.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is that the social construct of the Garu Nation also feeds into that. The renowned system is anchored in the notion that doing more excessive stuff is better. Killing a horde of Fomori is better than killing just one. And so you can have a character who wants to focus on the millipedes, wants to focus on the little things, that all of these little things will build up, that what Gandalf said and all that. And the nation is going to look at that person and say, no, you're wrong. You need to be doing more. And so, yeah, there's...
That feeds into that radicalization theme.
Yep.
Where if you try to be a moderate about it, if you try to do gradual change, you live in a society that says what you are doing is not enough. And you are already isolated from human society because you have rage and are seen as a monster from them. And with that theme of power, that also then plays into the other great thing about this game. Very frequently, World of Darkness fans will talk about how awesome the games are in general, because there is a diversity of representation that can exist within them. And that's very true, particularly Vampire 5th Edition. Once they fixed their controversial issue with that, They were very big on making sure that they were inclusive. Werewolf has its issues. Do not get me wrong. Hashtag change that fucking glyph. But queer people have always existed in Werewolf, the apocalypse. They've always existed in it. The Black Furies would not be a thing if they didn't. Representation of minorities and indigenous
Native Americans.
Dear God, indigenous people in general.
Might not have had the authentic voices, but yeah, this is...
Yeah, you have to go to indie games to find representation of indigenous people that at least tries to be respectful.
Mm-hmm.
Werewolf already has it there and says they are valid in what they are saying.
Yep.
This game is so great for being inclusive with its voices. And it further amplifies this, I think, with one of its strongest aspects, which is its kinfolk. Kinfolk, if you look on it on a mechanical level, they're the equivalent of vampire ghouls. They are normal people who are aware of the supernatural aspect of society, and they thus do what they can to serve it. But whereas ghouls serve vampires as individuals, because the conflict and horror of vampire is a very internalized individual horror, the horror of werewolf is very systemic and community-based. And thus, the voice of the kinfolk fills this very, very unique niche of being individuals who have things to say. One of the best books to be released by White Wolf easily is Unsung Heroes, mm-hmm. the kinfolk book. That story plays into the theme so well, because you have these small, disempowered people who are even below werewolves, who are themselves just individuals trying and tearing to tear at a system greater than them. And then below them, they have kinfolk who are even more disempowered than they are. And there's this relationship of kinfolk abuse is a regular problem with the game, because if you get power over someone, you have the power to potentially hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
But the kinfolk also don't exist within this world where they just exist to be abused either.
They are not simply servitors.
They fight the worm in their own ways. They live their own lives. They help in ways that they can help. And it's a beautiful system. Like, sincerely, if you are a veteran werewolf player and you have never played as a kinfolk, I kind of pity you, because it's an excellent way to really dig in and understand this game. If you're a new player, definitely start playing a werewolf, because that's the fun stuff. But if you really want to get deep into the themes of it, play a kinfolk sometime. Seriously. Done it once, I will happily do it again. All right, so it's a little emotional from my side, but hopefully that just shows how sincere I am in making these points.
Yeah.
This game is so worth your time to try. It's got its flaws. We've pointed those flaws out. We will continue to point those flaws out in the future. But it is absolutely worth your time to at least try.
So yeah, for the abbreviated version, if you've got someone who's never experienced werewolf before and you're trying to convince them, again, you have this opportunity to grow as and become a better person by playing this game. And you have all these tools at your disposal. There's so many resources and options for how you can create a character who fits into and impacts this world. And these themes fit into that of being called to action and wanting to do something. And so the frustrations in your real life can manifest in this character, and it can be cathartic, or it can be terrifying in terms of what you could do if you had power. How could you abuse that sort of thing? And so, yeah, I hope that has been perhaps a long-winded, but...
Dear God, that was incredibly long-winded, but you still missed a very, very important point.
Us. Pentex is something unique to Werewolf the Apocalypse. With Pentex, you have an insidious antagonist who is everywhere. You cannot escape Pentex. Every aspect of your life, we touch it. Our fingers are on that pie.
And it doesn't matter. You can blow up our rings. You can stop the publishing of our Black Isle games. It doesn't matter what tone you want and how many victories you claim. You are cutting off one Hydra's head.
I'm sorry, I got distracted by this Fomori cat that just walked in and won't shut up. Fomori cat, silence you. Ah, possessed by a bane of obnoxiousness. Anyway, with Pentex, the storyteller has an antagonist that can be beaten to smithereens but does not die. You don't need to worry about the players killing off that vital NPC antagonist. Oh, Pentex always has a response for that. If you kill off the CEO who had concocted that nefarious scheme to bulldoze your cairn, that's a pyrrhic victory, because they're just going to nominate a new person. Blow up a building? Insurance forms will hold them back only so long before they're better than ever. There is nothing you can do to destroy Pentex. It's very, very easy to hurt us, though. Especially for the player who has experienced our influence. If you've worked in a retail job, and you find that there are ways that you can hurt this company, well, that just feeds into what those other blokes were saying about the tools at your disposal. You know of ways that you can hurt us. We're so open to being attacked. But you cannot, in fact, kill us. You can destroy our buildings. You can blow up our manufacturing sites. You can terrorize our laborers. But really, you're just feeding what we're already doing anyway. Those laborers will be that much more easily possessed. The insurance claims will get us more money in the end anyway. Because how often is it that terrorists are going to blow up your logging site? You can really set the insurance company on for that. Right. Notice how Pentex doesn't have any insurance subsidiaries? Because we're exploiting them. We cannot be destroyed. But it's very, very easy to get that little once-a-day win to keep you in the fight. But you never have to worry about us being wiped out or obliterated. We are endless.
What was this that they were talking about? Something about themes of radicalization. What radicalizes someone more than experiencing horrible, banal oppression on a day-to-day basis that would drive many people to irony poisoning? The same irony poisoning that many would use to dismiss this very game that encourages people to care about things.
What was that again, little Fomori cat? Repeat that. Yes, that's a good point. Oh, yes, yes. Elaborate more. Oh, very good. For those of you who couldn't hear the voices in your head translating the mad meowlings of that Fomorian cat, we here at Pentex utilize Fomorians, who are the best antagonists ever. Forget Black Spiral Dancers. Most of those are one-note, one-trick ponies, insane gibbering fools who are only there to be killed by the players. No, Fomorians are these juicy, innocent people who are corrupted because the Garu aren't doing their jobs well enough. And you can come up with so many different origins for these Fomorians. If you have a player who's worked at McDonald's for 10 years, you can create a Fomorian who embodies their in-life struggles and then pit their imaginary character against a World of Darkness facet of what they experience every day. How would you react to that if you encountered yourself and had the power to kill yourself because you yourself are an embodiment of what's wrong with the world as your character sees it? Dine on that one, little Garu. You can come up with so many delicious concepts and ways to explore these ideas and really bring out the true horror that we provide for the Garu Nation.
And we don't even have to corrupt the people who spread our horrible agenda. Say, per se, there is a comic book artist who builds up a vigilante for the sake of satirizing, quote-unquote, the idea of the vigilante, only then to have that vigilante symbol slathered across police vehicles.
And if you don't want something so viscerally destructive to the player's psyche, if you want something a bit more lighthearted, we can fit that role as well. As these two other hosts have been saying for almost a year now, it's very, very open to
taking what you want and getting rid of what you don't. Listen to that Silent Strider episode, a perfect example. And so, if you don't like the facets of our organization, such as Black Dog Studio, then you don't have to use it. But if you want something to sort of keep the players playing because Pentex has been destroying their emotional and mental psyche for sessions upon sessions on end, then you can introduce Black Dog Studios and have them face off against a group of regular old schmoes who started playing Magic the Gathering, and you know, when they opened a pack of those cards, they just smelled so good, and you couldn't quite put your finger on it as an individual, but the Garou understand that it's because those are little banes that seep into the air and get down into the nasal passages and really make you want to buy another one, because that scent is so fleeting, so lingering, and just that high of getting a new pack of cardboard crack will keep them working their dead-end jobs, keep them slaving away day after day to make it to the next paycheck, to the next unboxing event on the weekends, if they can even get them. But yes, you can lighten the air, so to speak, with our other facet. But really, I feel it's that true dark horror of realizing that the real world is where these antagonists live. If you don't like Andron because it's too corny,
just replace it with BP.
Did they ever face any sincere consequences for that leak in the Gulf of Mexico? Is their PR still impacted by it so many years later? Or is their PR even impacted when so many oil companies are nefarious anyways?
Thank you for enjoying our contribution to this small, very small, and unofficial podcast. Thank you for having us as guests today. We promise you will never, ever rise to our grandeur.